You're listening to The Edie J. Adler Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom, amigos. This is Edie J. Adler. Welcome to The Edie J. Adler Show. Thank you for tuning in. Please tell a friend, and if you want to make a phone call to the show, let me give you the number right now. The area code is 323-203-0815. And as always, this show is dedicated to everyone. Every topic is welcome, except if we start calling each other names or insulting each other, that's not me. So I will block you. So don't do that. You have other shows for that. Today we're going to be talking about how to keep ourselves safe. These are scary times, and we need to know certain things. And for that, let me welcome my guests. Both of them have been with the LAPD. They're very handsome, and I can say that. My husband is here, but I speak the truth, my friends. So, Roy, Ron, why don't you please introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about yourselves and your personal or professional experience, whatever you want to share with me. Who wants to go first?
Hi, Edie. It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to our hour we're going to spend together. A little bit about myself. I was a United States Marine. I served in Vietnam, came back, became a police officer like my father was. I spent 36 years in law enforcement, had a great time. I was blessed to be a peace officer. After leaving, I actually became a professor at a university for about 12 years. Then I started my own bodyguard company, and we currently guard the rich and famous of Hollywood.
Including me.
Including you.
Especially you.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you.
And, my dear friend, tell me a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, I'm Randy Cordobes. I'm retired LAPD after 23 years of service.
Or I would say Cordobes.
Cordobes. Going on the department was never my intentions. I have my master's degree in business, and that's how I started off, and I got laid off, and I just jumped ship and went straight for law enforcement, with some job security.
Well, thank you for your service, too.
Thank you.
You know, I was reading recently, I don't like to quote statistics because I think sometimes statistics are manipulated a little bit depending on what you want to convey. But I was reading something really scary that Los Angeles, where we live, is more dangerous than 93% of all cities around the United States. What do you guys say about that, and why do you think that is?
LA is definitely one of the more dangerous cities in America. There's no doubt about it. I've had the chance to work South Central, East LA, and patrol other areas, and those are very violent areas. The reason is multifaceted, and it would take probably 10 different areas to cover why. But I believe the primary reason is that we have become soft on crime, we have neutered our law enforcement agencies, and we've given the criminal the opportunity to be violent and to control our streets. And it's sad.
I know. You know, I used to, when I worked downtown, sometimes I would take the metro. More convenient, I wouldn't have to deal with traffic. And I kind of liked doing that. It gave me some freedom. I would not dare do it now. I'm scared. I've seen so many horror stories about people just being pushed on the tracks. And why is that happening to our beautiful city? I know that, like you said, we're soft on crime. Unfortunately, we have people in charge of this city that don't make it hard on the criminals. In fact, they make it easier. But how do we take our city back from all this destruction and all this corruption?
That's a tough question, because there's too many facets as to why it is the way it is. I mean, homelessness is part of the factors now. Mental illness is definitely a factor, and we can't control any of those, not from our position. But as far as being pushed onto a track, that's where you have to keep from being a victim. You just don't stand next to the track. You have to watch yourself. You have to put yourself in a position. If that means up against a wall or a pillar, that's fine. If that means putting your back or against the wall, or even wait for the next tram, which nobody wants to do. Everybody's in a hurry. But you yourself have to watch out for yourself and keep you from being a victim.
Right. You know, when I was about 17 years old, my father took me to the Hollywood Bowl to see Barry Manilow. I adored Barry Manilow. Later on in life, I had the opportunity to work with him. But and when we came home, we had to park on the street because we were renting a duplex. We lived in the front. And then it didn't occur to us to look before we opened the doors. So I opened my door. My father opened his door. One guy jumped on me. The other guy jumped on my dad. My dad had him right away because my father was no sissy. Right away he grabbed his hands and he put his knees on this guy's chest. But the guy on me had a gun. So, frankly, I thought I was going to be shot. I thought I was going to be raped and then shot in front of my dad. And I was praying, not for life. I was praying that I would be killed before my dad because I didn't want to see my father die. And so I told my dad, you have to let him go. And my father was still holding on to this guy. And he said, no. And I said, Daddy, they have a gun. So he kind of looked. He saw that the guy was pointing a gun to me. And then he let him go. And he said, but don't touch me. I'll give you whatever you want. What do you guys recommend people do in a situation like that?
Edie, can we get back to that question? I'd like to answer your first question about what we do to take back our city.
Yes, please.
And I believe it's become active. Too many of us sit on the couch at home, and we don't do the things necessary to control our city. We need to vote. We need to vote for the right people. We need to do our background study and learn who's hard on crime, who supports law enforcement, who is against the criminals on the street. We have to do that homework and figure it out who it is and vote for those people. We also have to become active. We have to join groups that will help to save our city. What those groups are, you have to figure it out on your own at home. You have to figure out what kind of group you want to be involved in, but you have to be active. It starts at the high school level. We have to pick the right people running our schools to educate our kids appropriately, to get them in the right mindset. Simple things like Pledge of Allegiance in class, things like respecting America, knowing what the Constitution means, and educating our youth so they understand the greatness of America. That's one of the ways that we can fight to get our country back. Now, what would I tell somebody who is involved in a situation you were involved in? First of all, it's situational awareness, and it's knowing the environment that you're moving through. Edie, you and your dad should have been studying that street as you were driving down. You should have looked for suspicious cars. You should have looked for people lurking in the shadows. You should have tried to pick out where an attack could come from. By doing that, it's called pre-incident indicators, those things that warn you that danger is imminent, those things that tell you that, yeah, this is a very scary situation to be in. So the best way we protect ourselves is by seeing the danger before it ever reaches us. Once the danger reaches us, we're in serious trouble because they have the advantage now. They have the weapons. Many times they have the numbers or the strength to overpower us. fighting back. Let me tell you this. You said you were afraid you were going to be raped. Mm-hmm. Statistics on rape are clear. If a woman chooses to accept her fate and simply plead not to be raped, she will be raped 98% of the time. If she screams loudly, screams for help, she will only be raped roughly 50% of the time. If she fights violently, she will only be raped 14% of the time. And if she's lucky enough to have a weapon, a knife or a gun, she will only be raped 2% of the time.
Wow.
So understanding those numbers gives us a clear indicator of how we want to respond. Most law enforcement officers want to take the easy way and tell you, don't resist, don't fight back, let them take what they want or let them do what they want with you. I would never teach my kids that. I would teach my kids to resist. But the answer to that is, if they resist, they could be killed. Roughly is a person who resists a crime killed. So I would say, Edie, back to what I started with. Know your environment.
Right. The only reason that I didn't fight back, because when I was little, I was bullied. Horribly bullied. And the girl was twice my age and twice my size. And my father and mother came to a point where they were just so fed up with me coming crying every day from school that my mother said, okay, if this girl hits you one more time and you don't hit her back, she talked to the principal and did all the normal things parents do, but they didn't do a thing. So she was fed up with it, and she said, if that happens again, I'm going to spank you. So now I was afraid of my mother, and I went to my father, Daddy, she's bigger, she's... And my dad said, well, you're not going to pick her up, you know. You're just going to defend yourself. So don't ever hit first. But if they hit you, hit them harder. So I learned. I beat the daylights out of this girl. She was 14. I was 7. And ever since then, I never, ever backed out from a fight. But this time, the first thing I saw was the gun. And the first thing that he did was put it up to my side. So I actually did push the gun away. Mm-hmm. That was my instinct to push his hand away. But he kind of hit me on the side with it and put it back on. So that's when it clicked. You know, this guy means business. I better do what he says. So I turn. I see my father trying to fight them off. And I said, Daddy, they have a gun. So, but... I have a friend. I'm still friends with this gentleman. He was also LAPD, retired. He's an entrepreneur now. His name is Roberto Arguello. I don't know if the name rings a bell. But when we first met, I was working at KMEX, Channel 34. And one of the things that he said for me to do is whenever you walk outside, day, night, whenever, put your keys between your fingers like this. And if anybody tries to grab you, hit them right here on the nose or right here, the edge of the eye, with your key, and then run like crazy. Is that good advice for a young girl or anybody else?
Distraction or fighting back is always a good idea. Okay, I know why he's suggesting those areas, because he's trying to get the eyes to water, which would take away a lot of his visibility and gives you the benefit of the doubt, at least a head start. Doesn't have to be keys. It could be a lot of other things, but the keys are the most readily available. So, yeah, I would suggest that.
I'd take it a step farther. I'd say go for the eye. Stick that key right in the center of the eye. Try and blind that person. We have to make a decision on how much force we want to use to protect ourselves, how much we want to hurt the other person. We have to put it in proper perspective, Edie, and that is, this person wants to hurt us, maybe kill us. So we have to use that force that ensures that we're safe. There's a great book out there by an individual called Colonel David Grossman, and it's called On Killing. And it talks about the average person, not the average, a good portion of people, even faced with the possibility of being killed, can't inflict that amount of damage that could possibly kill their assailant. They just don't have that type of mentality. And they end up dying because they couldn't use the force necessary to protect themselves. It's a good book to read, On Killing by David Grossman, and it might give some insight to your listeners on what it takes to fight back.
Right. You know, these days, guns are not very popular in the media. And they always talk about the people who get killed accidentally because they had a gun in the house. But they don't talk about the people who were saved because they have a gun in the house. So statistically speaking, I think it's a good idea to have a gun. My husband and I have guns, and the reason I have a gun is because somebody tried to break in my house when I was there. And the dogs were barking, so the dogs were not a deterrent for these people. And then they came back about a week and a half later, and I said, these people are serious. I better be prepared. I hope to God that I never have to use it, but I have it, and I'm not afraid to use it. I'm afraid of what I will feel like after I use it, but it's there. And what do you guys think about people who educate themselves about guns? You just don't go buy a gun and then don't know how to use it. What would you recommend people do?
I think every household should have a gun. When I was a professor at the university, one of the questions I raised to my students was about the Second Amendment and why our forefathers developed the Second Amendment. And they would commonly say, so that we could have guns to protect ourselves against bad guys. That was not the intention of the Second Amendment at all. It was to have guns to protect us from the government. And when you say the media is opposed to weapons, I'd like to say that the media is an arm of a political party right now. And when they advocate taking away guns from us, what they're doing is trying to neutralize our ability to resist a government who could become oppressive. So I believe everybody should have a gun. When you look at total of guns worldwide, America is the most armed country in the world. And being the most armed country in the world, we are in a position to oppose a tyrannical government.
How do you educate yourself about using a gun? Are there places where you can take a class, or you just go to the shooting range and start practicing? Or how do you do that? How do you know how to use a gun for it to be safe for you and your family?
I had never touched a pistol before I joined the department. And it was amazing to me how you can rotate that gun 270 degrees with very little ease, as opposed to a shotgun or rifle, a long barrel. It takes a lot to get from one angle to another. But going through the academy and being taught the way I was taught, you should not have a gun in the house unless you know exactly how to use it. And I'm not talking just going to the range and firing downrange. I'm talking about everything from loading it, keeping it safe, to oiling it and cleaning it. There's a level of responsibility in that, because even if you do have a gun in the house and you know how to do all that, if you have kids in the house, now you need a safe or some other way to keep it safe or keep your kids safe. But you have to keep everything to where it doesn't come back against you.
Right. Why is it so hard in California to get a conceal and carry permit?
Gets back to politics, Edie. We are a liberal state. Excuse me. And a liberal state is opposed to the idea of gun ownership. So what they try to do is make it as difficult as possible for you to get, own, and carry a weapon. And it's unfortunate because If we look at those states where they have the ability to carry guns, you see a lot of people who are able to save their own lives because they have a gun with them.
There was a shooting in a church a couple of years ago when one of the parishioners had a gun and he ended up killing the shooter, right?
6 Seconds of Chaos, I think that was called in the media.
Right.
Yeah. The suspect got off 2 shotgun shots, killed 2 guys, and then the other parishioner, that was a great shot. It was a good distance, a good headshot, and shut everything down immediately.
He would have ended up killing everybody in that church, I'm sure.
He would have done some serious damage, yes.
Yeah. So guns are not the problem. People are the problem. The same with pit bulls. You know, pit bull is just a dog that's been mistreated. It's the person behind that animal that is the dangerous thing. And I think the same thing about guns. Gun is not the problem. It's the person holding it.
Can I backtrack a little bit?
Yes, please.
When you said about somebody coming into your house, you didn't know if you could shoot them. That goes back to exactly what Roy was saying a little while ago. You have to have that mindset to do more damage to them than they're going to do to you if you need to think like that. Okay. With mental illness and in this church situation that you're speaking of, the guy had one intent. He was going to do as much damage as possible. The gentleman that the parishioner that shot the suspect knew what he had to do, and he did what he needed to do. Okay, and so again, it's mindset. Can you take that shot if you were in that position?
How do you get in that mindset? How do you do that? How do you prepare yourself for something that might never happen, but if it happens, then you're ready?
Gets back to what I was talking about with the book by Colonel David Grossman, and that's educating yourself on the things that you will feel if you're in that position. So I would try to obtain those books that talk about the mindset for armed conflict, what you will experience, the fight or flight or freeze syndromes, as we call them, what your body will go through, how your minor dexterity skills will become challenged because your body now pumps the blood to the major muscles for the fight scenario. So your vision will actually diminish. You will get tunnel vision. Your breathing will increase. Your, as I said, fine motor skills, like pulling the trigger, will be much more difficult. And you will find yourself in a position where you say, what am I doing? I can't do this. But if you educate yourself, if you understand the process that you will go through, if you understand how the stress will affect your body, your mental, and your mental ability in that situation, you will be much better off.
I don't know how I would react. I always think that I would be able to protect myself and my family and even my animals because I love my animals too. Because my grandfather was murdered before I was born. I never met him. But everyone who talked about my grandfather always talked about what a wonderful man he was. And he was shot in the back. He didn't even get a chance to defend himself. Coward. And because I grew up with that and seeing my mother cry every time she talked about her father, even though it had been 40 years or so. Having that, I always thought, well, if somebody ever tries to do that to someone I love, they're going to go ahead of me. They may meet me in the other side, and then I will continue to beat the crap out of them, but on the other side. But I hope I'm never in that situation, but I don't know how I would react. I think I would react properly.
Have you thought about it?
I think about it from time to time, especially with the anti-Semitism that we are experiencing these days. By the way, I forgot to say at the beginning of the show, which I always do, this show supports Israel, and we are proud and grateful for this beautiful country, the United States of America. I say that every beginning. I forgot this time because I was too excited by the looks of my guests. But there you go. We support Israel, and we are grateful for the United States. Is it safe to walk at night?
Yes.
And no.
Exactly. The question is, where are you walking? Okay, yep. That's the whole thing.
Downtown?
Oh, no. No, no, no. Downtown is a different scenario. It's not that it's not safe. It's just that certain streets are better than others. I was walking through New Orleans, and I was going from one location to another, and I was just on my feet touring around, and I was going from one location to another, and I'm starting to go down this one street, and I'm looking at everything around, houses that are vacant, a couple people out in the streets. I just said, this is not the block I'm going to walk on. So I just went to the left one block and continued on my way. You have to pick which sidewalk you want to go down.
Speaking of vacant houses, this seems to be becoming a problem nationwide, where you have a house that it's either for sale, or in the case of a very dear friend of mine, her mother passed away, and all of a sudden squatters took over. And it so happens that the squatters have more rights than she does.
Depends how they do it.
And so how do we protect our property if you're not living in, if you have inherited a place, if you have a vacation property or you have an apartment for rent? How do we protect our property from becoming somebody else's free rent place?
We have to ensure that we do our due diligence, Edie. First of all, if I have a property I know I'm not going to rent out that I've inherited, I have to secure that property. I may have to board up the doors and windows. I may have to put a fence around the property. I may have to invest in those ways that I can protect my property. Also, I may need to drive by that property once a day if it's close by me. If not, I may have to hire a security company, and for a minimal amount, they would drive by the house once a day to ensure nobody has moved in. It's a very difficult situation, and we as the owners now, we have to do those things necessary to ensure it doesn't end up in the hands of other people.
What do you do if somebody already moved in?
That's a tough one. That's more of an attorney issue or an eviction process. It depends on how prepared they are. I've heard that there are some people that have fake leases. You know, they're just bottom line is they're fake. And then you now have to go through the legal process.
Right. You had to hire an attorney and yep. go through a great expense. And then she had to hire an eviction company. And even after this, the judge gave them 30 days to leave and take their stuff.
I'm surprised it wasn't 3 months. But yes, it doesn't surprise me.
This was in Nevada, so.
That explains it.
Yeah, but it's horrible. And before we continue, and speaking about protection, some people have dogs for protection. I have them for both because I love dogs. So this week's featured pet is Peace. That's his name. So may Peace be with you. He needs a family who will open their heart and home to him forevermore. Peace was a buddy. Peace and a buddy of his were brought to the East Valley Animal Shelter in Van Nuys, California, in May. Allegedly, they had been living in a homeless encampment. Peace was microchipped, but no one came to the shelter to look for either of them. And guess what? This makes me really, really angry. The other dog was euthanized. Perfectly healthy, friendly dog, euthanized for lack of space and for lack of compassion on this, I'm not going to say the word, but whoever owned these dogs. I hope there's a special place in heaven for them. Anyway, Peace is very easy to handle. He's street motivated, and he appears to be housebroken. He has a bit of a tilt to his head. He's just adorable. Look at him. Look at that beautiful face. He flips his ears in all directions, and he has beautiful, soulful eyes. The shelter volunteers adore him, and they say that he's a gem, about 6 years old and about 63 pounds. So why don't you give peace a chance? Or any other animal at the shelter, please go visit and save a life. The East Valley Animal Shelter is located at 14409 Van Owen Street, Van Nuys, California, 91405. Speaking of dogs, especially big dogs, I have heard and I believe that most of the time they're a good deterrent for people who are planning on breaking into your home. Is that true?
Absolutely. Some of the burglary styles now are distraction or knock-knock burglars, so they'll come to the front door. They'll already have a ruse in mind. They're going to knock on the door, and if you answer it, oh, I heard my Aunt Clara used to live here, you know. Bottom line is Aunt Clara never existed, never lived there, but they were going to, if you didn't answer the door, they were going to go to the back, break in the back door, and go steal all your stuff. A dog, especially the bigger ones, I've got a 120-pound Anatolian Shepherd. When he barks, the windows rattle. Okay? I mean, it's intimidating. So if anybody knocked on my front door, he's going to go nuts. Nobody's coming in that door. So, yes, they are a deterrent.
Good. I know that some people keep their dogs outside at night. I always thought that was not a very smart idea, because if they're outside, somebody can give them something to put them to sleep. Somebody can give them some poison and kill them. If they're inside, they will at least have a chance to wake you up. What do you guys think about that?
As you guys remember, years ago, there was an individual named Richard Ramirez, and he was called the Hillside Strangler.
Night Stalker.
And the Night Stalker put the fear of God into every person in Southern California. I remember working the desk one night while he was active, and I must have had 30 to 50 calls. I hear something out in my backyard. We were sending cars constantly because people were terrified. It changed the way I lived, Edie. I used to sleep with my bedroom door unlocked. I didn't have an alarm on my house, and my dog slept in a doghouse on the back porch. Once I learned about Richard Ramirez and how he would stand over his victims and wake them up, it changed the way I lived. My dog was moved into the foot of my bed. My bedroom doors were locked. My gun came out of the gun safe and under my pillow, and an alarm was put on my house. So in regards to your specific question on dogs, I prefer my dog on the foot of my bed watching over me.
That's where our dogs sleep, by our bed. We have a German Shepherd and a Pit Bull, both from the East Valley Shelter. I got to say, though, if people are going to adopt a big dog, a powerful dog like a German Shepherd, a Pit Bull, a Doberman, they need to educate themselves and know how to handle the dog. Because otherwise, if you don't know the dog's history, you don't know what you're dealing with. So you got to make sure that you're the pack leader and that you know how to handle so you don't have a situation. But pit bulls are not the monsters some people make them out to be. They're just protective of their people.
Depends how they're raised.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. And that's exactly why they got the reputation they did, because they were not raised the right way.
Most people use them for fights.
Exactly. That's exactly true. But going back to indoor dogs, all my dogs sleep inside, generally on the bed with me, except for my 120-pounder. But if you ever watched our canine units work, you will see that they sniff out stuff from at least 100 feet away. So if you had a dog in the backyard, I guarantee you they would alert you far before anybody can give them any poison or anything like that. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen, but you would know why they're barking, and you wouldn't be happy with that, which means you would go investigate. Okay.
Good to know.
Yeah, they're just remarkable animals.
Yeah, whenever I see a canine, I'm always tempted to go pet him, and I always have to remind myself, he's working, leave him alone. I learned that when I adopted a retired seeing eye dog, and so I had to learn about seeing eye dogs, and I learned that you don't go pet a working dog. You just don't. And I also find it amusing that people go like this, they give their hand to the dog. I'm always thinking, dude, that dog smelled you yesterday.
Well said.
You don't have to do that. By the way, I'm going to need your protection on September 19th because Neil and I are going to senior prom.
Whoa.
And I want to invite you, not as my bodyguards, but as guests of Lisa Gibbons in this magnificent fundraiser that is happening on September 19th. So come dance the night away at Senior Prom in support of Lisa's Care Connection on September 19th at 7 p.m. Senior Prom is where we get to bring all generations together. Whether you're a student senior or a senior citizen, Senior Prom is your night. Enjoy delicious hors d'oeuvres, drinks, music, and dancing. Tickets start at just $75, and if you can't make it, you can still make a tax-deductible donation of $75 and send a senior to prom. For more information, call 818-847-3686 or visit lisascareconnection.org. Would you come with us and support this wonderful, wonderful nonprofit organization?
I don't see any reason why not.
I would love to be there. What time does it start? What time does it end?
7. And it ends when my father would say, hasta que el cuerpo aguante, which loosely translated means until my body gives out.
I'll be done by 8.
I was just going to say it's getting earlier and earlier as the days progress.
My dad was an amazing, funny man. And he loved this country, going back to what you said. He was an immigrant, of course, but he loved this country, he loved Mexico, and he loved Israel with all of his heart. And he would have given his life for any of those, or for his family. And it would be very sad for him to see what's happening and to see how our country is in turmoil, really. I would dare say that we're facing, if we're not already in, kind of a civil war. Thank God it's not too violent yet, but I've seen what they call demonstrations, and I would call riots, where people are turning cars upside down, burning things, burning the flag. Now, I don't understand that. Maybe one of you can explain to me why people have the right to burn the flag. I think certain things should be protected, and I think the flag should be one of them. In Mexico, when I was growing up, if you dared do anything to the flag, they would, if you survived the mob, they would put you in jail. And I frankly don't understand why the flag is, okay, so the Palestinians burned the flag, they're not American. But why Americans do that to our own flag? Why is that legal?
It revolves around the First Amendment and freedom of speech. The courts have ruled that an individual who burns the American flag is simply expressing their free speech. Do I agree with it? No. What I find especially interesting is if somebody grabs a flag of the gay rights movement and burns it, it is considered to be hate, a hate crime. Yet we can burn the American flag and it's acceptable. These are things that either make a nation great or they destroy it. And the people behind the burning of the flag, their bottom line, they want to destroy this great nation.
I agree with you. I agree. I don't want anybody's flag destroyed. I don't care whether I agree with them or not, but I think flags, especially flags which represent a country, should be respected. And why don't we go a little bit lighter before we finish? I'm going to ask you for more advice on how to keep ourselves and our property safe. But I'm sure that in all the time that you spend with the LAPD, you had funny cases. Did you want to share any funny instances?
Go ahead, Randy, while I think.
I'm going to say the same thing. I have to think about a few of them.
I'll tell you a funny one that happened to me. I was speeding. I admit it. I was speeding. And I got stopped. And I had less than a quarter tank left. So the police officer knocked on my window, and he said, license and registration, please. Do you know why I stopped you? And I said, yes, officer. And I thought, I'm going to play it dumb. I said, officer, I am so sorry. I have got to get to the gas station before I run out of gas. And he looked at me like saying, well, she's blonde, but... And he looked at my car, and he saw that I was really low on gas. And he said, say that again? I said, I have got to get to the gas station before I run out of gas. He just moved his head, and he said, don't speed.
That's a cute story.
I actually pulled over a lady once for speeding, and as soon as I got her driver's license, I just said, oh, darn it, I can't give you a ticket. And she started just chuckling, and she goes, not that I'm complaining, but why not? I said, we have the same birth date.
Oh.
Not the same year, but the same month and day. And so I let her go.
Oh, that's nice.
Just as simple as that.
Happy birthday.
Exactly.
You don't have to be nasty to be good at what you do.
Oh, no, no.
You can. I have to say, all the policemen that I've ever interacted with have been very, very nice and very professional, even when they stopped me for whatever. Police women, not so much.
Interesting.
But the guys, all nice, all friendly, grateful when I told them that. Sometimes when I see policemen on the street, I approach them and I tell them, thank you for your service, please stay safe. And they're always nice, always good. They make me feel good.
Good.
How about you? You have a funny story?
I have a joke.
Okay, go ahead.
Suspect is speeding down the street, and the police officer is right behind him with red lights and siren going on, and the man won't pull over. Finally, the man pulls over, and the officer walks up and says, sir, why didn't you pull over? I've been following you for miles. And he says, officer, my wife ran away with a police officer 3 years ago. I thought it might be you trying to return her.
Oh, that's funny. I have another one.
Okay.
I have another joke. There's this guy's driving down the street and down the highway, and one of his lights is out, so a police officer stops him. And he goes, do you know why I stopped you? And he said, no, was I speeding? He says, no, but one of your lights is out. Oh, that must have just happened because I didn't realize that. I'm sorry. I'll have it fixed right away. And so the officer has his flashlight, and he's looking around inside his car, and he sees a bunch of huge knives and a couple of machetes. And he goes, huh, what's that? What do we have here? And the guy says, well, officer, I am a juggler, and I've just come from a birthday party where I was working. So that's what I do. He says, really? Show me. He says, okay. So he gets out of the car, shows that he has no weapons, and he grabs a couple of the machetes and starts juggling. And a car goes by, and the driver of that car looks at that, and he goes, I'm not going to drink and drive anymore. Look at the sobriety test they're giving now.
Very, very funny.
Thank you. Well, we're almost at the end of the show, but we still have a few minutes. So I would like you to think about what advice you would give, not just me, but anybody listening who has to go out, who has to go walking. I when it's not too hot, I go walking, and I'm always with my keys like that, like my friend said. And I'm always looking over my shoulder, even though I walk during the day. And I'm looking at the cars and trying to see where I am and what kind of cars are driving. But I know that most people get distracted easily. I do get distracted easily, especially if there's a puppy on my way. I lose it. So I want each of you to give us your best pointers, how to keep our houses safe, how to keep our children safe, how to keep ourselves safe, please.
I was going to start off by saying the first scenario you gave, by which is walking and your safety there. My first answer to that is put your cell phone away. You didn't say that, but that's what most people are doing. They've got their cell phones in their hands. They're crossing streets while on their cell phones. Now, I'm not talking. I'm talking reading, punching stuff in. It's amazing how distracted people are with just their cell phone. So going back to that scenario, just stay out of your cell phone.
A couple things with that. I agree with Randy that too many people have their head down looking at their cell phone, and they never see that danger as it approaches. But also keep that cell phone readily available. If you see somebody coming at you that concerns you, bring that camera up and take a photograph of them, and then throw that camera into the bushes. Hopefully, if you're mugged, killed, when they do a crime scene analysis, they find that phone and they can get a picture of the suspect. When you have a person who is in road rage, make sure you get your phone out and get a picture of the driver and the license plate. First of all, the camera itself can deter problems because the individual now says, oh, I'm being recorded, and they may move on. But recording who they are is essential. As for walking with your keys in your hand, Edie, it's probably good advice, but I would take it to the next level. I would swap those keys out for a OC spray or pepper spray. I think it would be more effective than the keys. On the other hand, I may carry a loud horn to alert the neighborhood that I'm being attacked. The keys are a good idea, but I think you can elevate your defensive tools to a higher level. Lastly, for protecting the house, I'm a strong advocate of cameras. A lot of people say that cameras do not deter crime, although many studies show, one conducted in England of parking lots showed a significant reduction in crime by the mere presence of cameras. But what I like about cameras is, while I'm out and about, Edie, right now I can turn on my cell phone, I can go to my app that has the cameras, and I can check on my house right now from here. And that gives me a sense of security that we didn't have 30 years ago. We have the ability now to constantly monitor our house. And if we see something suspicious, we get somebody out there right away.
Thank you. Speaking of road rage, I've had situations where people have started trying to start a fight with me at Costco, of all places. And one time it was because, you know how they give you those samples, and the guy had a bunch of little papers, and he threw them on the ground, and there was a trash can right there. I was by myself, not with my husband. And I just said, sir, there's a trash can right over there. So this guy was probably about 6 feet tall. He gets right on my face and starts cursing me out and yelling at me. There were men around me. Nobody did a darn thing until I finally went like this and I said, what are you going to do? You're going to hit me? Go ahead. I'm not afraid of you. Go right ahead. Hit me. And then another cashier came around and just said, come over here, miss, come over here. We'll open up another for you. But it's unbelievable to me that no man stood up for me and said, that's enough, buddy, or did I do the right thing, or should I have just ignored him, or what do we do in situations like that?
You know, Edie, we are decent human beings, and we see inappropriate social behavior. We want to speak out. Unfortunately, the people we speak out to could be very violent, and we have to weigh the situation. Somebody's going to come along and sweep those wrappers up in the next 30 minutes. Would I let it go? I would probably let that go. But it's very difficult to let it go because we're not raised that way. We're not that type of person. We believe that people should conduct themselves appropriately in public, and when they don't, it offends us.
But once he got on my face, did I do the right thing by standing up to him?
Yes.
Or should I? Yes? Okay, good. Good to know.
And I'm glad your husband wasn't there.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, because then it would have gotten ugly because he would have defended you.
And then somebody would have ended up either in the hospital or in jail.
And as it worked out, you prevailed. Well, you stood up to him and you walked away from it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you to my handsome guests, my beautiful guests, Ron, Roy. Thank you so much for coming, for all your advice, and for all you do to keep us safe. Until next time, and you want to say goodbye to our listeners?
Thank you for having us. Goodbye.
It was fun. Thank you. And to all the visitors, it was a pleasure to pass on the information to you.
Thank you so much. Until next week.
You're listening to The Edie J. Adler Show, only on LA Talk Radio.